apply to public officials only or to individuals such as members of the press. I know that there are a number here who expressed to me some concerns that if they should find out about this and publish it, that they might be subject to criminal penalties. But in any event, I guess my suggestion would be to say that divulging this information is a misuse of confidential information under AS 1156-860.
Madam Chair, I would make that motion. I think
so. All you're saying is make it consistent.
Make it consistent with the
misdemeanor.
Sure. I think we meant to do that.
Well, Madam Chair, I was going to bring that up
sure.
later time. But good point.
Bill, could you tell me why you put Class C in there?
Class C was in the draft, but I got my hands on it the first time and I didn't look at it. I would think, of course, the suggestion that Dean had, I think, is definitely correct.
Okay. The motion's been made to change Class C on page 13, line 13, to Class A. Any objections from the committee?
Misdemeanor Class A.
Misdemeanor.
Yeah.
No, I don't think so.
He said misdemeanor. The suggestion, I believe, that Dean made was instead of setting the class, you just cross-reference as guilty of a misuse of confidential information under the section prohibiting disclosing confidential information.
That was my proposal.
And that penalty is what? Misdemeanor?
That's class misdemeanor. So it ties it into the current.
All right. The motion, let me to clarify, would be to reference on page 13, line 13, the part in the code where a divulging of confidential information would be. And it's AS 1156-860.
Madam Chair. Yes. I have a problem with that if it's the commission member. Tell me what the penalty would be under that code. That's true. I mean, we've gone from the very beginning how important that was.
Class A, it wasn't only for Class A misdemeanor.
Yes.
It's a year in jail or $5,000 a year.
Well, that's good. All right. Any more questions for Mr. Guarnelli? Yes, Representative Phillips?
No, I don't. He covered one of my points I was going to bring up after he finished. Do you have anything else that we didn't hear about? I mean, you're about to leave.
We're trying to get the other 66-100 to move.
You have no more comments or questions or objections?
Nothing really of a substantive matter in terms of drafting, in terms of definitions, a lot of terms that I wasn't sure about. I think we could have some definitions in there. But substantive matters that.
Mr. Madam Chair,
yes, Senator Joseph.
The concept of legislative immunity is a criminal case concept.
No, it's not.
It's a civil case concept.
It's both civil and criminal.
Well, how, in your opinion, does that, what problem will that pose? For example, if the commission has authority under this bill to report to the legislature that a member failed to cooperate with its investigation, could the member say, tough luck, I have immunity, I don't have to cooperate?
The immunity applies under the statutory, the constitutional language, to any other tribunal other than the legislature. So a member has no immunity if the body that is disciplining is the legislature itself.
We had a question raised by one of our colleagues. I think we passed that. We have some advice that we've passed it. Who thought there could be a problem under legislative immunity because we were using a commission, but we see the commission as a legislative agency and advisory to the legislature. Therefore, our view as a committee is that you could not invoke immunity in that situation.
That would be my view also.
Yes, Representative Mocker.
I would like to ask the Assistant Attorney General if, in fact, it is the Attorney General Office's intent to draft separate legislation and introduce it regarding conflict of interest as how it applies to legislators.
Well, let's put it this way. That's something we hadn't thought about. And I guess I'd have to say that at this time we have no intention of doing that.
But you will on the executive branch of the government.
Yes.
I will have an opportunity to take a part of that legislation.
Thank you, Dean, very much. Bill, would you come to the table, please?
Sure.
Yes, sir.
It
Dean had brought up, there was 3 points I wanted to make. One of them was just taken care of. The other one is, I got to admit, I haven't read this draft word for word or that carefully because of the time constraints I had this afternoon. But Billy, is there anything here about the employees of the legislature applying it from range 18 on up?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, could you point that out?
That's page 2, lines.
Okay, I see it.
7.
I see it.
Okay.
You know what I'd like you to do? If I can get him to do that so that we don't flip through the same. If you could go through here and show us where you have made those changes that we asked for on Friday, if you could.
Right.
And I need to ask you one question before you begin that. On page 1, line 24, under the findings, and I realize the findings and purpose are not binding, but just for informational purposes, you say to render advisory opinions. Well, we stated in the body of the bill that the commission could go for more than an advisory opinion, did we not? Or did we define between preliminary and advisory? Yes, sir.
You've got to remember, the first is to consider alleged violations of this chapter. That's all of the broad stuff.
Okay.
In other words, the hearings, the charges, et cetera, these are all considering violations. But in addition to considering violations, they can have the kind of thing that hits my office fairly frequently. I have such and such an interest that just create conflict.
All right, fine. Would you please now go through the bill and flag those things? Senator
Chairman. On legislative finding and purpose, back on that sentence, legislators must avoid conduct that even appears to violate the trust the people have placed in them. I would hate anybody to be accused of having a conflict of interest because they must avoid even the appearance. I don't think you can avoid appearance 100% of the time. I think appearances are very deceiving. I think what might appear to be a conflict of interest to one person or a group of people will not appear to be so to another. I would like to substitute the word should for must in there. And I think it essentially accomplishes the same thing. It would be legislators must, real legislators should avoid conduct that even appears to violate the trust of the people in place.
Comments from the committee? Senator Josephson?
I agree. Sometimes the most responsible thing you can do is to risk that appearance. I think what you think is right. I think it was Caesar's wife who was supposed to have a pure reputation, not Caesar. No, I agree with Senator Kelly. I would support it.
How does the House feel about this?
Oh, I don't know. It's been such a tough one from the very beginning. And every time we address it, There's a definite urge to somehow soften it. And I hope that at this late date, we're not going to do that and somehow eliminate one of the major reasons for even drafting this legislation. That's my only concern, Madam Chairman. From the very beginning, it's been so important and one of the most important reasons for doing this.
Yeah, I like the word must in there, personally. Representative Phillips, do you have a comment?
Well,
must not.
Sort of feel half and half. I think I'll have to go along with Josephson. I mean, you know, this is we're going to try to grab Bill 99-44-100 pure, and it's no perfect bill. I'm sure
we can come back to this tomorrow.
Okay, we're going to have to, Senator Kelly.
Also, I've got something before we get to where Billy comes in here.
Okay.
Applicability, I got something I spoke to Billy about it earlier. The discrepancy here, where on line 28, where it says the legislature, it's pertaining to who this applies to, and it says a permanent or temporary employee of an agency of the legislature established under AS 2420. That statute applies to the Legislative Affairs Agency, applies to the Ledge Council, Ledge Audit. There's a couple of people it leaves out, like the Ombudsman, like the Senate Research Division, like the House Research Division. So in order to clean that up, I would think if we just added that, we just put a period after the legislature and then delete established under, I guess, 2420, that anybody that works for the legislature under a range 18A would be applicable.
I would be very supportive of that, Senator Kelly, and you cleared up. I meant to include all those people, particularly some of those people that you mentioned, and I would have been very upset to discover those were out. Okay.
Was it legal? Can I legally draft to mean one?
Chairman, this was intended to be clarifying language, and I agree.
committee to scratch the reference on page 1 and page 2, page 1, line 28 of AS 2420, and on page 2, line 16 of AS 2420, and just put a period after the word legislature in each one of those sections. Hearing none. Thank you, Senator Kelly. That was great. Okay, Bill, you're on.
Madam Chairman, I'll go through the changes one at a time. On the applicability section, which begins on page 1 and continues on page 2, there was a limitation, two persons whose compensation is below step 8, range 18, state salary schedule, which is set out. That sentence was getting horrendous, so I thought it was better to break it into parts. The next change is on page 3, line 12. The competitive bidding statute was specifically referenced.
Okay. Oh, we got the percentage.
Senator Justison.
I am, just want to go over this matter of the repeal of the common law in the view of the discussion we just had. There was the common law of crimes, which the Attorney General rejected, comment which the Attorney General cited as existing to this area of conduct, saying that even though some conduct, as I remember his opinion, might be not found to be violative of any particular Alaska statute, there was the possibility of prosecution of the idea of a common law criminal standard. Is that, do I understand? No, no. Okay. He was talking about a civil common law. Okay, go ahead.
Incidentally, Mr. Chairman, if I could, well, maybe I should make that later. I was going to say, if you wanted to assure that this doesn't conflict with the criminal law, the applicability section, this B, I think, would be the place to put any clause.
I would think it would be the will of the committee to put that in there, because we in no way have ever meant to imply that something should happen.
I don't think it does, but if you feel happier with the language in.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Kelly.
I presume we're moving right along to the bill, if that, well, then backing up the step. On page 2, line 25, I was under the impression that about 2 meetings ago, we had decided to delete the language the commission determines that as to a specific matter. In other words, there's no conflict of interest a priori, and the commission doesn't automatically have to judge every single thing that might or might not. That's not an obvious conflict of interest. If a person's interest is not significant, the person's authority is relatively far removed, does not exist, and then again, we've got the commission in there, if no benefit or detriment accrues to a person. I was under the impression it's just that language out so that every single issue or every single relationship didn't have to go to the commission unless there was a complaint.
No, Senator Kelly, it was my understanding we left this in here on purpose so that if someone did want to go, if they weren't sure, and I think Mr. Barrier even argued to this, that if in 10 cases everybody was absolutely sure, but there were 11 people on the other side that said, oh no, I think there is a problem. So we wanted this in here for someone to be able to go, to get an opinion as to whether there was or wasn't, because substantial impropriety to one person may be substantial impropriety differently to another. So to be absolutely certain, we wanted this person to feel that they could go. Senator Johnson.
Thank you. I think my recollection is like Senator Kelly's, because as I understand it, there would be nothing to prevent the legislator from asking the commission whether there was a conflict of interest. You don't need to have, you can always go and ask, and the commission will advise you. But the point is that in a situation where there is no substantial impropriety or even an appearance of impropriety because of these reasons, you could not say that a conflict of interest did not exist because the commission hadn't uttered the words. And, that this would just add a lot to the work.
You're going to overburden the commission if they've got to make a decision on every single potential, even obvious non-conflict of interest out there, is what I'm saying. You know, everybody has to go to the commission just to be utterly safe, even when they know it's a waste of their time, and the commission is obviously going to say there's no conflict of interest, you're going to overburden the commission.
Yeah, come in.
I see what you're saying. I thought was that this was to be left in so that, in effect, you could get a binding determination. But I think you probably could get a binding determination if you took that out both here and in phrase of D, where it occurs again.
Yeah, well, I want to see a binding determination on questionable calls, but there are some calls that are so obviously not questionable that why bother unless there's a complaint?
Why would you have to bother?
Because it says you have to.
Yes, Senator Josephson.
I understand it. If you do not have a determination by the commission that you do not have a conflict of interest, then you would have a conflict of interest, even though, under this language, even though there was only an appearance of impropriety and no substantial impropriety, or even though your interest was relatively insignificant, or you were far removed from the action. And that would also put you in the position, I think, of going to the commission in every case to ask for an opinion, which could take 30 days. In the meantime, I don't know what you do when you're waiting. What do you do, Mr. Barrier, when you know, when you have to go to protect yourself, you have to go and ask for an opinion, and they've got 30 days to answer. And we're in the 90th day of the legislative session. I mean, what do you do then? You just freeze the...
Yes. I would think, after thinking it over, that this argument could be made, and I would think that it could be a worrisome argument, in which case I would recommend taking this language out. The point, of course, is that what you've got here are matters where there would be a conflict of interest, but for these removal factors. Mm-hmm. And the concept was that if you had something that would be a conflict, except for these factors, there should be a commission determination. But the concept that you have to go to the commission with everything could be a trouble to
pull out. Well, let me give you an example. Okay, for example, let's say we pass this. All right. Let's say we pass something like the criminal stuff that the AG is. All right. You're a member of a Alaska Native Corporation, one of the 80,000. You're a legislator. There's all kinds of legislation coming through here that directly affects that corporation, be it right, a profit or non-profit, right? When you take an action on a bill of the chairman of the committee, you withhold action on a bill, you're directly affecting that corporation. Okay, now, the thing is, you might be one shareholder of 30,000 or one shareholder of 2,790. That is, of course, a relatively insignificant situation. And I think that it's obvious to everybody here that anybody out there that is a shareholder in a Native corporation, you know, does not have a conflict of interest. All right, but under the terms of this, every person in here that serves, that's a member of a Native shareholder, is going to have to ask the commission for an opinion as to whether or not there's a conflict of interest because he's a member of Doyon or a member of Bering Straits Native Corporation. And I think it's just common sense that is not a significant interest enough for a conflict of interest.
Representative Walker.
Yeah, Madam Chairman, didn't we start out that the key was early disclosure, and if there was any question about it, you know, woe be unto him who had not asked for an opinion, should someone question it at a later time. And I think that's how this all started. And now, I think it's just kind of grown.
Senator Josephson.
Can I ask this? There's another concern here. Senator Kelly raised the question. Let's suppose you have that situation, and so a legislator who is a Native stockholder goes to the commission, and the answer is your interest is there is no conflict of interest because your interest is relatively insignificant. Under the language that you have incorporated here, legislator B, C, D, E, all in the same position, have to go back to the commission and get a specific answer to the specific matter all over again, even though there's a precedent on the books from the commission. Well, I know, but it says if the commission determines that as to a specific matter, there is no substantial impropriety, which would almost rule out the use of commission advisory opinions as guidance or for precedential value.
Yes, Mr. Berry.
Madam Chairman, I think that was taken care of in B because the conflict of interest, which could substantially benefit or harm a financial matter in which a person has a direct or indirect private interest. So you've got, in effect, what these are. You've got this generally that you could rely on. You've got this commission determination, and this gives some standard by which the commission would determine when it went to an advisory opinion.
Okay, Billy, can you? Do we have to strike this to take care of their concern? Because I don't read it the way they do, but there's two of them. And they it's both are reading it the same way. And you two read it the same
well,
way?
Well, no, I'm just concerned that Senator Josephson has brought up a point that I didn't realize we had written into this. And that's my concern. I guess I'm confused at this point. Yes.
I would suggest deleting it because I think that the deleting this would not mean that you could not go to the commission for an advisory opinion at any time you felt an advisory opinion was necessary.
What is the amendment? By page and line?
Better focus on page 20, on page 2, line 25, it would mean to delete the words, the commission determines as to a specific matter. And on page 3,
well, excuse me.
Go ahead.
I think it should be, if the commission determines that, so that it would read, conflicts of interest are prohibited, but there is not a conflict of interest as to a specific matter. If as to a specific matter, there is no substantial
right. Okay. Yes. All right.
So just strike out the commission determines that.
And then on page 3, line 5, you would delete the word the commission determines that.
This does not preclude a determination by the commission, and a prudent legislator would ask the commission whether his or her transaction falls within this category. But it would not require that you get an advisory opinion, which takes at least 30 days, as to every transaction in order to have the non-conflict result.
That's why I asked him for the language change.
Is that a form of motion?
Yes, Representative Phelps, do you have comments on that?
I don't think with that motion as stated, I don't think I have any real problems. That's why I asked for specific page and line number and what was being deleted. A little confused of whether you were going to delete the whole section C or part of it.
Okay, that was two. Okay.
Yeah, okay. I would move the motion.
All right, the motion is for everyone to understand. Page 2, line 25, deleting, the commission determines that. And on page 3, line 5, the commission determines that. Here, are there any objections to the motion, Representative Phillips?
Just for a point of discussion, I thought we were also deleting the word if.
No.
I think I heard you wrong then.
Any objections?
No.
Okay, very good. Thank you. We are on page 3, section 040, contracts. I have an amendment to this. We still have a blank under part 1 of that. And this amendment, having called the Department of Revenue, they said it's very common to differentiate. What's
the problem? We had one blank. Now we have two.
But I think we're getting closer on our side to these two blanks. The amendment would define a dollar amount for the firm or corporation that would be involved in there. And the Department of Revenue said that's very common to do. Rather than putting one percentage that could determine an impropriety or an ownership interest, it's more common to put various percentages over differing amounts, because 2% of Western Airlines controls Western Airlines. I found that out for your information. And 100% of some corporations doesn't matter. So I have this amendment to put in here in place of number 1. open to discussions.
Now, of course, you're risking double your problems here on this.
In excess of over $5 million, I would like to have 10%. And in assets of less than $5 million, I will entertain a motion.
25.
I hear 25.
I move 25%.
I move the adoption of the draft language with the figures 10 and 25 inserted in the blanks.
Hearing no objections? Very good. Thank you very much. Motion carries. All right, Mr. Barrier, where else are we?
I need to make a note, because if I don't mark these, I forget them.
I would like to ask the committee one more time in bringing up the AG's objections. There's no reference here to source of income for the immediate family, and he has suggested a definition of direct or indirect financial gain, or benefits, excuse me. What is the will of the committee?
I'm sorry, Madam Chair.
Page 3, under section 040. The Attorney General has stated that he would suggest that there be a definition of direct or indirect financial benefits in this section, or either that, barring that, are we excluding immediate family members or what? He raised two questions in this section.
May I inquire, Madam Chair, whether there is language that we can consider now on defining direct or indirect financial benefits? Do you have any?
Do you have any suggestions?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Phillips.
I'm not necessarily advocating this, but just to get us off the dime on this, why don't we include the same definition that we had for, husband, wife, spouse, that same definition, that laundry list we had, I can't remember all of it, but it was
child, husband, wife, mother, father, sister, brother, or permanent member of the list.
But we can't use adult children.
Because... Well, I just said I wasn't advocating. I'm just for purpose of getting this off the dime.
The problem was that in some cases the business activities of someone in those relationship status situations are not germane to the legislator. What we're looking for is language that covers everything where the legislator has a direct or indirect profit or loss, but does not relate to the status of relationship per se.
We have a bit of a further problem there, and that is conceivable that it's conceivable that you do something for a child, for example, that you wouldn't do for yourself. It's conceivable that you do something your father, knowing that you're going to inherit. Those things are conceivable. So there are future benefits.
Yes, Mr. Barrier.
Madam Chairman, this, I think, has been discussed virtually every meeting of the committee. The committee early on decided, particularly for the reasons that they're bringing out, that these definitions actually were harmful in a broad general language. It's the only way to approach it.
Representative,
earlier drafts have precisely this long string.
I'd just like to say, Madam Chairman, that I tried to solve the whole problem. I don't think they have any business getting contracts, and that would have solved all of this. And I think you were in agreement with me at one time.
Well, I have come to the same conclusion as Representative Blocker. I don't think, in reality, we're going to have many sole source contracts, be it immediate family or what, but you never quite know.
That's the only.
You know, what you have to remember is that we've got a bottom line here, and it's not just the civil penalties or the criminal penalties. It's also called a constituency that you've got to go back and answer to. And I don't know about your constituents, mine is pretty tough on certain things like this. And so, you know, we've got that ultimate judge, so to speak.
This is just strict. This section, I believe, is just competitive bidding. I don't see anything.
Yeah, this is sole, a competitive bid.
It's not sole source.
Section.
No, not.
Sole source is prohibited.
Yeah. I think Senator Johnson's creating some language here.
Oh, boy. Well, can we pass this point?
Certainly. Absolutely. All right, we'll fight this area. Please continue, sir.
The next change is a deletion. You have to look at the Friday's draft.
The 08.
Friday's draft.
4-8 draft.
The 4-8 draft. On that, the legislature's participation, the prohibition against legislative participation in state voting programs was deleted.
Sorry, Billy, one more.
The prohibition, the subsection that prohibited the legislature from applying for a state loan for a period of 1 year after I voted was deleted. The next change was made today. That's the addition of any amount. Page 5, line 24. The next change is...
I wonder if we couldn't have language in there that said something. Well, does that take care of the problem where, you know, you say something, nothing in this section construes the acceptance of anything? You know, I think the AG picked up a nice little red herring on this, but it's not our purpose to allow these types of things under $100. Rather, it's our purpose so that you don't have to worry about how much something costs because you know you're going to get something in the mail that you don't want to have to return, you know. And I wonder if there isn't some language we can put in there, or if we already taken care of it with Senator Dobson's wording.
Well, and another point that I think we need to make, and you brought it up before, is the consulates, the Japanese consulate, the Korean consulate have been here already. It's a custom in their country to present a gift to the leader of whatever organization they're visiting. And Senator Petula got a lacquered box from the Korean consulate inlaid with mother of pearl. He was hysterical about accepting it. He was really frightened and immediately called APOC. And yet, to this to the Korean consulate, it would have been an insult for him to do anything but accept it graciously and thank you kindly and then go about his business. But he didn't ask for it. He didn't want it. It was just a common courtesy of one country giving a gift to the leader of a legislature.
But, Madam Chairman, the President of the United States handles that every day.
That's right.
I mean, there's no problem.
That's correct.
He sticks it in the White House. We need a museum.
Well, that's what we have to do. It's symbolic rather than an individual gift.
Yes.
So I think the point here that we're trying to make is, can this area be stronger, or do we have to, what I think what the Attorney General would like us to do is eliminate the $100 totally and say it is forbidden. But we're putting that in there to accommodate the calendars
and
stuff.
There's no law right now. There's nothing to prohibit us from accepting a $1,000 gift right now.
That's correct.
Right.
That's
right.
Am I wrong, Billy?
No, that's right.
Right. All right.
That's right.
So what we're saying is, look, you know, we don't want to accept gifts, but if we do get one under $100, you know, then what do? And if we do get a calendar through the mail, if we do get a date book through the mail, you know, are we really expected to send it back? My guess is no. And I think the public will accept that under $100 deal if it's clear that you can't get a succession of $100 gifts. You brought up a pretty good point.
Do we need this stronger?
Maybe you can think about it.
Okay. Representative Phillips, oh, let me make one comment, please. I see Senator Mulcahy here, and I ignored Senator Fahrenkamp down there. If you have any comments, please just signal, and you have the privilege of the floor. Representative Phillips.
Well, I want to address the problem that Senator Fixit brought up about, you know, Senator President accepting a gift from Korea. I think in the future there might be some problems with that. I mean, how it says that a person may not accept any gift over $100. So if the Koreans or the Yukoners want to give something to this government here, I mean, I wouldn't want to put the president in or any one of our guys actually receiving it, and you know it's worth over $100. How do you handle a situation?
Yeah.
Well, but you're still saying
a. Don't take it home. Take it and they give it to the museum, or there must be
of course, I mean, there's this conversation about the Far Eastern tradition, which incidentally doesn't sell too well, as a certain press secretary in Washington found out. But the point is, I think any foreign official either would or should not be insulted if he's told this is a delightful gift, but unfortunately our law forbids me to accept it. If you provision that says you're forbidden to accept it. I think that would neatly take care of that.
Okay. That's fine.
All right.
Offer language.
Senator Josephson.
Okay. What I would, this may be, let's just try this out for the discussion.
Where are we?
040, joint, direct or indirect financial factor.
Okay. Got it. Page 3, line 15.
Okay. Something like this, Bill. For the purposes of this section, quote, direct or indirect financial benefits, close quote, means gains, comma, income or profits derived by a person to whom this chapter applies, comma, by virtue of a state contract, comma, without regard to whether such person is named in or identified as a party to such contract, and whether or not such gains, comma, income or profits inure to such person as a partner, shareholder, investor, agent, employee, consultant, or joint venturer of the contractor.
Are you suggesting replacing the whole, this whole?
No, I'm just saying that the complaint was that we don't have a definition of direct or indirect financial benefits.
I think much of that has eaten up your specifics. I think much of that has eaten up your specifics.
What do you mean by my specifics?
But also it's swallowed with the 1 and 2 for corporation and partnership.
Does this phrase appear anywhere else in the chapter? Direct or indirect?
I don't recall seeing.
Not that I know of.
Would you, assuming that, could you take this and perhaps put that at the end of the chapter in your definition section and make modifications? If you think?
When we have it typed up, look at it.
And make whatever changes you think.
Yeah, I think.
Don't disregard my pride of authorship.
Or penmanship.
All right, we're on page 5. Okay. Mr. Barrier doesn't feel that the gift section needs any strengthening. How about the committee?
Yes.
Except for the one amendment that we've made on line 24.
Madam Chairman, I do think that we're going to have a problem with $100. I mean, I hate to bring this up again now, but at one time when $100 was used as the amount, I think Senator Kelly was thinking in terms of a dinner or whatever, but in light of the fact that we've already discussed that we're talking about calendars and we're talking about pens or paperweights, $100 seems awful high.
I would take a look at 26 and 27. Whether in the form of money, services, loans, travel, entertainment, hospitality, or other forms.
Well, why use $100? Why use in excess of $100? Why use that at all if we're only talking in terms of cannot solicit? I don't know.
Well, all right. You know, I'm big on St. Patty's Day. My staff gives me a shamrock every year, probably costs them $12, $15. Am I guilty or not guilty? I have a birthday. You know, my staff gives me a tie. Am I guilty or not?
Still, you haven't said anything that even appears close to $100. This is what I'm saying. It's almost as though...
My staff doesn't spend that kind of money.
Right, so why are we using $100? That's what I'm saying.
Well, all right, $100 might be high.
I'm just worried about the conception.
All right, I'll concede that. I just don't want to be in a position where you have to worry about the amount of something.
$150? $25? $37.50.
What's the matter with? I think we're nitpicking.
Okay.
I think we should leave it at $100 and see what the will of the Judiciary Committees do.
I just think, Madam Chairman, we're going to hear from the public on the $100. Does anyone like to be free?
Well, then you answer and like to take $1,000 now. What's your choice?
I would prefer to leave it at $100 because when you receive something, you don't know what the value is. And if you have to, I mean, if you have to start worrying about that, I would rather have a margin there and, so that it's not an issue.
That's the point. And I don't know how many we're going to have over. I don't know, Barbara. Let's let it ride and see what happens. We can always back off somewhere else.
Okay. Go ahead, Joe. Page 6.
Page 6. Line 25, the compromise language that someone worked out, that, or a permanent member of the legislature's household was added in evidence.
Very good.
Would that mean?
Shh. quiet. Go on, Bill.
The first time we got up here with
us. But on page 9, two relatively minor changes. I line 13, it would serve as executive director or staff, since there's no more executive director, that is deleted. And on page 24, word legislation.
You mean line?
I mean line 24. Recommend to the legislature legislation. Legislation was switched back to where it belongs.
Sure.
It now reads. It's considerably better. On page 10, there is another deletion, the authority for regulations. The commission issuing regulations. There was
the question. We deleted the specifically put that 60-day provision in there so that one wasn't going to be hassled for an election. Now, it says no complaint other than a complaint initiated by three or more members of the commission. I don't recall us making that exception, but proceed within a period of 60 days preceding a state primary or general election. I, to be honest with you, think three members of the commission initiating is too low to initiate a complaint 60 days before.
Yeah, we're never supposed to be hassled 60 days.
And why is it in there?
My understanding was that the committee quite clearly wanted to make a distinction between charges initiated by the commission and the facts which would be usually very substantial charges and the quote baseless charges by the general public. So I had understood that that distinction was clearly the desire.
Here's my problem. You're going to have probably four members of a political party on that commission, and legislative races, you never know. But in statewide races, governor's races, it might be to the benefit of one political party to come out with a major complaint, you know, against the legislator who happens to be running for governor, lieutenant governor, Congress, 60 days prior to the election. And I hope that commission won't do that kind of thing. You never quite know. And I'm just wondering, number one, why that's in there. And number two, even if it's in there, 3 out of 7, give me a break.
Where is it?
What page is line 10?
Well, start on line 29, page 10. With no complaint. Okay. I'm wondering why the word, other than the phrase, other than a complaint initiated by three or more members of the commission.
I would make two amendments on page 10 and then ask that the question be provided.
Certainly.
On the last line, strike out 3 and insert 5. And line 2 of page 10, strike out yearly and insert periodic.
Where do you see that?
Same page 10.
Oh, page 10. Oh, I was looking on the left.
Discussion on the motion. Page 10, line 2, delete yearly and include periodic. Line 29, strike 3, and replace it with 5. Representative Phillips?
Well, I don't have any problems with increasing the 3 to 5, but we have it twice a year or 4 times a year. You know, what's that mean?
Monthly.
If you leave it to the commission, they may say, well,
quarterly
report as well.
Okay,
yes, Representative
Lockhart. Going back to what Senator Kelly just said, and of course now Senator Joseph's had changed it from 3 to 5, let's think in terms of what can happen if an incumbent is running for office and we allow that during the last 60 days a complaint to be filed. Automatically, within 30 days, it's going to be made public. And it does what he says.
No, it does. That's not true.
Okay.
Because you could file the complaint and they could hold it under advisement for 40 days.
This is initiated by the commission. If you've already got 5 people initiating a complaint, the commission itself, they pretty much have their head made up. They probably investigate the thing in about 2 days.
No, but they don't, as I understand it, it would be like a finding of probable cause or something analogous
to
that.
Okay, they would report it
and
to the legislature.
They would say, no. It's not a one-step process. They would initiate a complaint. And under their regulations, they would have to give you an opportunity to respond. And they would probably have a rule that said 20 days or 30 days to respond. And then you would be entitled to a hearing. They couldn't just initiate a complaint, find you guilty,
that's a pretty substantial number.
I think it's
that voice of partisan.
And I think that the problem is that there might be a significant and compelling complaint that just pops up. And if it's so serious that five people in that commission believe it should be looked into right away, then there perhaps it is something that should influence the outcome of the election.
I think this really protects the public, too. I think five protects the candidate or the incumbent, and this provision protects the public from electing someone who, well, like Nixon, for instance, take Nixon. If the public had known that information prior to the election that they learned immediately after the election, he possibly would not have been elected and have saved the country a lot of grief. They knew.
I would like to make an amendment to Senator Joseph's amendment that's on page 10, line 2, and just put published quarterly.
I really believe quarterly is, it's too many.
You spend all the time published?
Okay, twice a year.
I like twice a year.
Yeah, I just think it ought to be stated instead of. Is Madam Chairman
semi-annual?
Madam Chairman, I'll withdraw the amendment, but quarterly and replace it with semi-annual.
I accept that.
Very good. So we've got an amendment to the amendment, semi-annual on line 2, and we're still down at 5 on line 29, Senator Josephson.
Oh, okay. I asked for one of those consent orders. 5, Senator 3.
Yep, Carrie, you got it.
Now, may I add another? I'd like to ask the Department of Law and Bill Barrier on something else. Mr. Lancaster suggests that we might want to consider a statute of limitations for bringing complaints for past alleged or potential conflicts where you continue to hold office. And in other words, there is on line 10, a limitation that says that if you leave office, that an investigation as to an alleged conflict would have to begin within 1 year after the termination of your state service. There are limitations on the criminal side, the criminal code side, aren't there?
5 years.
Okay, but suppose a legislator who's been here 15 years is held to answer by the commission for something he did in 1970. Should we have a cutoff point which says that there's a, because you can't keep records and memory of all the votes you cast and all the conversations you had. Isn't there a rule of reason that says that we should say that if it's more than X years old, it can't be gone into by the commission?
That seems reasonable.
Yeah.
They had several charges against Powell, and the ones which were essentially kickback type, as I recall. I don't recall the facts that well, but several had occurred prior to the term, prior to the beginning of that Congress, and the court knocked those out.
Okay, so do you think that's covered in that by that kind of precedent?
I would think it'd be directly applicable.
Do you think that we need to state that the matters in which the allegations can relate to must have arisen during the term in which the legislature was last elected or something?
You can't if you're going to allow them to file this complaint during the re-election.
No, why? Because of the interim problem.
The interim problem wouldn't be relevant. You're still in the legislature during the interim.
So I can't tell you what I... Because the legislature wouldn't convene until after... I'm not interested in that aspect. I just want to avoid the problem of remoteness.
Yes, sir.
Now, let me bring up another point that takes
page 10, line 25. In a proceeding begun within 2 years after the alleged violation occurs and within 1 year after termination of state service.
Yeah. I like that. I'm not sure 2 years may be too short, but I really see a problem if you go back very far, given the hundreds of actions we take.
A 2 year period would make sense in light of the
Would you put that language in there, please? Hearing no objections, putting a statute of limitations in there.
I'm going to have to object because I have to think about it. That's not very long.
Well, I leave the number blank.
Number of years.
The number of years blank.
But do you agree? Do you agree with
you
that?
Agree with me. Okay, fine. Leave the number of years blank.
Number of years blank.
Well, we haven't agreed that
we haven't agreed that it should be two. Okay. But we've agreed to the language.
The statute of limitations on election misconduct cases a year. Much to the chagrin of the APOC.
You know, I pay my fine.
The next change is on page 11. Line, starting with line 8, new language. If the commission determines that the complaint does not contain allegations of facts sufficient, if the alleged facts are treated as true to constitute a violation of this chapter, the commission shall summarily dismiss the complaint. On page 28.
Wait a second. Is that as strong as everybody meant it to be on the committee?
What line is it?
Line 8 through 11. Page 11. Senator Josephson.
That gets to the idea that when the commission receives the complaint, it must be sworn to. It must, for the purpose of deciding if it is a sufficient complaint, treat it as if the allegations were true. And if it looks at that sworn complaint and cannot find allegations there which constitute a violation of the chapter, the complaint's thrown out. And that has the virtue of requiring the complainant to state proposition of fact rather than just state conclusions or illusions.
Okay, Representative Phelps?
No, I agree.
Please continue, Governor.
The next change is on line 28, page 11. It originally read, the director of the commission was the person charged with violation. I used a representative of the commission because the new hiring, they'll probably be doing this on contract. It was difficult to pin down precisely to them, but I thought a representative would be probably the most useful substitution. Then, on page 12, let me get one short one out of the way, because there's three that you have to look at together. On line 26, the word or failure to cooperate was added because of reasons of the last meeting. Then, if you look at starting on line 16, each decision down through 20, then must be accompanied by a written order of the commission. I use the order specifically and required that the order be confined to this determination. That is a public record.
All right, very good.
Then it was a determination if there was a finding, if there was finding a probable cause, that they would be released in all cases in the 30 days. So on line 28, I've added, the commission shall make the decision public 30 days after the referral. And then on page 13, as a public, as the officers, I took out the may on line 7 and made that a shall. Then added 30 days after the end of the decision. Those three really have to be read together to get to where I was directed to go last time by the commission. That's what motion.
All right. A word of caution to the committee. This is the most significant changes we made in the other draft as far as real substantive change. And so what I'd like to do, because the hour is late, to take also for Senator Kelly, on line 16 on page 12, sir, it says the decision of the commission shall be in writing and signed by four or more members of the commission. I'm just asking if you would like to make that consistent and keep it at five, or is four acceptable? Okay. All right, very good. So would the committee please take time to read these three areas here to see if it meets with your approval? Sure.
I'm a little confused by on page 13, line 5. If four members of the commission agree to a decision that a former member or an employee or a former employee has violated, the commission shall issue. Why do you use the word former as opposed to? What if the commission, what if the decision affects a current
member?
Yes, Mr. Mayor.
If it affects a current member of the legislature, you're covered with H, and the actions are taken directly or taken by the
House.
By the House. So you have to split off current members and everybody else.
What about current employees?
That's what I'm
Mr. Barrier.
You do not want current employees in this H. Again, the discipline would be taken there.
All right.
Could and undoubtedly would be initiated by this publicity, but the limitation of discipline that you can really do to an employee is fired.
That's
there
why are we're other talking about that before.
That's something that I think that I picked up before and just forgotten about. We don't have to forbid. What do you do with an employee that has a conflict of interest as decided by the commission? There's no remedy here. We should be, I would think it should be returned to the Rules Committee of each body or something.
Yeah, sure. We can put it in that laundry list of. We were talking about earlier for actions of the commission itself. Am I wrong? Following our colleague with the Department of Law on lines 8 through 10 and page 13, in the case of a form of the legislature, we have a language, the Attorney General should exercise whatever remedies may be available to the state. I made it clear, and we'll do that again, that I don't think the Attorney General exercise any remedies unless it is a criminal situation, a criminal case can be made. And I certainly feel that the party, the first concern or the first sanction should be the legislature's own sanctions. But by not having that language under H, we create an implication that the Attorney General has no remedies. He only has the remedies if it was for a former legislator on the way.
In light of the earlier colloquy, I think this takes away nothing that the Attorney General has. I now think that this sentence is entirely redundant, since I think he has that in both cases. This sentence is redundant, and I think that does create an unnecessary implication.
I do too.
As the other, I think the sentence shouldn't come out.
It either should come out or it should be in both places, so I.
You don't want it in both places, because in both places, the Attorney General shall exercise whatever remedies may be available to the state. Could be and probably would be read as an exclusive commitment, which you certainly don't want it in the legislative situation.
Now, let me be very clear, because this could be misconstrued.
Would you like to make a motion?
Yeah. If we would move to strike that sentence, but with the understanding that it does not have the effect of denying, since we're not superseding the criminal law, it does not deny those sanctions in any event.
Right. Nor are you superseding portions of the civil law, for example, fraud, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, that may be involved.
I would move to delete the last sentence of section I, subsection I, on page 3.
Any objections? So done. Sentence 9, beginning and end, is deleted on page 13. But I still have my question as to what happens to the employees. Mr. Barrier.
What remedies? The remedies to the employee, right? That we have against an employee are an entirely different set. The remedies against the employee, the legislature itself, and the only remedy the legislature itself can use, because anything else is a bill of behavior, is to fire. And then there's whatever civil remedies exist.
I can see that in the bill. Not that the employee will be fired. The employee can be fired. But I think that somehow
the Attorney General still has his, the legislature clearly has that power.
I think specifically should say that dismissal is one of the, is a, and I'll tell you why, because I don't want, every time you fire somebody around here, you think, go to court, you spend $100,000 on a lawsuit. I don't want that language in the bill.
It's the intent, Mr. President, only will be in the bill, if dismissal is acceptable and possible.
After all, we can spell a legislature, fire an employee.
Really?
Sure. If you get a report from somebody who's in conflict of interest, you fire somebody, you haven't got a court case in that.
Okay.
Representative Johnson.
I have a question on, it starts with lines 28 of page 12, and it continues on to 13, lines 1 through, 1 and 2, actually. If the commission finds a conflict of interest for a particular individual during the session, it must report within 30 days after. But what if they find a conflict of interest, say in July, when we're out, and that wouldn't be considered being in session, of course. But it seems to me there should be something in there to expedite it instead of wait all the way into January and let that case fester for 6 months.
Randy, I don't think we want to call a special session number one. And if we're not in session, the power of that legislator is somewhat diminished, not totally, but somewhat diminished.
Well, maybe
what's the alternative?
Well, the alternative is maybe they can submit the report to the presiding officers, Randy, and let them handle it, what they want to do with it.
Well, that's what this says in here.
That's
what it says, the days during which the legislature is not in session may not be
counted.
But it says it shall refer the decision of the presiding officers of the legislature. Yeah. It's the legislature itself can't act if it's not in session, but the opinion goes to the presiding officers. Section
should show you. Here it shall refer the decision of the presiding officer.
Right.
This only modifies public, the time at which the decision is made, is required to be made public. It does not modify the referral.
I can spend one more minute on this thing. I think there might be a problem. Let's just go back. The commission says this guy is guilty as hell. Mm-hmm. Meaning a legislator. Well, the findings are that, we find enough evidence here that, this appears to be a conflict of interest. That happens in July. And the legislature can't act during that period of time because we're not in session. So you're going to let this thing fester for 5 or 6 more months. Whereas in another case, if it happened in January, and in February the commission says, there's a problem here. The legislature has a. I don't like that idea of leaving that 5 months there blank.
Well, you've got two alternatives, neither of which are totally satisfactory. One is that you can leave the blank you're talking about. The other is. There was some concern that the legislature should have an opportunity to investigate, to look at it, to set up the mechanism, etc., prior to the spate of publicity. You can obviously take this out, but those are the only two alternatives, and you can select either one of them, and there's undesirable parts to both.
Well, I prefer not, maybe put in that context, I'd rather leave the blank, because I want the commission to make a report.
Senator Josephson?
I am looking, are we through that subject?
Yeah, I am.
Oh, I'm not. Oh, Representative Locker.
Well, the concern here is probably the more serious one of all, is the fact that the public is kept in the dark for these 5 or 6 months. And that's the most serious part of it. See, we're not allowing them to make this public because we are retaining the legislature's opportunity
to act first.
Now, the file won't be made public, but the decision is public. The decision is public, and really, it's worse for that person.
Is that true, Mr. Berry? Will the decision be made public? No, you just said it won't be.
Let me make a distinction, and I carefully made a distinction because the decision contains stuff that you did not want publicized.
Okay, it's the yes or no.
The yes or no, the order will be made public.
The order is public. It's public from day one. It's all. It's the files. It's not. Have we settled that now for everybody in the room? Set it.
Joseph, please.
I'd like to address, which we haven't already talked about, Mr. Ganelli's letter of April 8 to you, Madam Chair, on the subject of conflict of interest legislation in communities.
Mr. Ganelli, would you come forward, please? Thank you, Mr. Barrier.
I have some concern about that because you state that you have drafted a statute which limits the scope of legislative immunity in criminal cases. You say the protection still remains for civil cases such as defamation actions. The bracketed clause at the end of the provision would be appropriate to include in the community, but there should still be protection for legislative activities such as voting or debating on the floor or in committee. I would think that the Department of Law would not want us to do anything in this area until the Supreme Court has made a ruling in the Dankwart case, because it seems to me like we'd be in the position of suggesting to the court by this that we either, depending on, one might read that an amendment by ours, an enactment by us, to mean that this was not the state of the law at the time that Senator Dankworth perform the acts or omissions he's charged with, and therefore we're closing the hole that he enjoyed, or it would be interpreted as being that we see the state's case against Senator Dankworth as being right and the trial judge is being wrong, and we're trying to correct the misinterpretation of the trial judge. It seems to me that we would be better off being educated by the court as to what the state of the law is and what the law as it now exists means, and being absolutely neutral in the Dankworth situation, rather than be seen as monkeying with that. What would be your response to that? This goes to the very issue, I think, that you have, that is somehow on appeal or cross appeal in the Dankworth case, isn't it?
Well, yeah, to some extent. We certainly thought about the concerns that you expressed. What this does is sort of clarify the issue once and for all. The U.S. Supreme Court has indicated that that legislative immunity can be waived by the legislature if it does so in express terms. And essentially what this is a very narrow waiver of those protections to the extent that they exist at all. In criminal cases in particular, what we're talking about is conflict of interest here. I think the question of if we're going to have a criminal conflict of interest statute and it's going to depend on a proof that a legislator used his office, I think we must get an evidence that legislator used his office, or else the statute has absolutely no application to legislators at all. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to settle it once and for all right now. I don't believe that this would have any application to the Dankworth case.
Go ahead, Senator Johnson. Just continue.
Well, Madam Chair, first of all, there's a reference here in the draft that the gentleman provided to AS 24.60, saying that legislative civil and administrative procedures and remedies are inadequate to deal with conduct that violates the law. I don't know if they're inadequate or not. I hope we have a good, adequate bill that will cover civil and administrative procedures, but we all agree that there could be criminal sanctions too. If that's what he's meant, I agree with that. But I don't know, and I don't know that we are in a position to determine that here, how far immunity should go. We're all aware that legislators write letters, caucus, do a lot of things that are not in both speeches, debates, or floor action, or committee hearings. Those are heavy policy questions, and it would seem to me the better part of wisdom to let you and counsel for Senator Dankworth address those to the court, study the court's opinion, see what changes are necessary in the light of that, be guided by whatever insights the court has, rather than step into it now. And from a public perception point of view, I think we could be seen in one of two unattractive lights. One would be that we were trying to bolster the state's case against Senator Dankworth after the fact, and the other would be that we were trying, although we requested, so I don't know if that would be a very compelling argument,
trying to make a point that at the time of the actions he's involved with, these kinds of limitations on immunity didn't exist, and therefore it's some kind of help to him. That's, I don't want to know about the Dankworth case. It's got nothing to do with me, but I would think we would be better off letting that fight proceed in court and then acting than by stepping into it. And I think it would have a bearing, because surely counsel would, from one side or the other, would cite our enactment for some proposition. I mean, I understand that in the recent Intertie case, somebody cited an entry in this year's Senate Journal as to what local hire means. So why wouldn't they cite an enactment legislation?
I have no doubt they're going to be.
Okay.
Yeah, Representative Phillips.
Well,
I know that Representative Clarkson brought this point up and talked to Representative Miller and Mike Ford had some language that was for a model. I didn't get all of it, but model language dealing with legislative immunity. We might want to discuss it anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, at least we have a flyby and see if that'll work. I don't know what it is. I had promised Clarkson that we'll take a look at it.
He's going to get a shot out of the House.
Well, I think we have to just look at, you know, it might be that language. Yeah. I mean, at least we can take a look at it. And if,
does the Department of Law, are you, I was going to say seriously, are you asking us to address this in the context of the rule?
Okay, wait, in all fairness to Mr. Guinelli and the Department of Law, I received quite an extensive packet from the Anchorage Women's Club Free Committee proposing similar kinds of legislation, and they did not want civil remedies at all. They were very, very concerned that all conflict of interest be in the criminal proceedings, and they felt very strongly that anything short of cutting off your head or putting you out in the stocks for 40 days was a whitewash. And so I asked, as a favor to me, and just to get a complete hearing of that proposed legislation, that Mr. Guinelli and the Department of Law review that and come up with a memorandum stating their position or looking at that particular reference from the Free Committee. And that's where this has come from, I think.
Madam Chair, does the committee, well, the Free Committee will come to understand that we're not superseding the criminal law, which should give us some.
It has not, Senator. I regret to inform you it has not.
It hasn't come to that conclusion yet?
No, and they're quite distressed.
Well, it's a stressful policy to supersede the Free Committee's opinion.
So anyway, Mr. Guinelli is the victim here, not an initiator.
What do you think, Joe?
Chapter by a member of the legislature shall be subject to the sanctions of this chapter to the fullest extent permissible under the provisions of the state constitution. Any violation not subject to the sanctions of this chapter by reason of the state constitution shall be subject to such sanction as the legislature may impose under its code of legislative ethics.
Sounds like a lawyer wrote it.
I don't understand.
I don't know what it does.
Well, the
gentleman
put
it
several drafts.
That was written before you got to this point. It was written also before I saw Randy's Code of Ethics. So there are no sanctions in there. And that's where the Model Act ties into the Code of Ethics. So it's just...
Are you suggesting that it should be put in the Code of Ethics rather than the conflict interest?
Well, that's what they're suggesting. And they have both in one package.
They meaning?
The model. National Disbelief Model.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Are you suggesting that we put it in the Code of Ethics rather than the conflict of interest?
No. I
still feel very uncomfortable with this as a matter of just
frankly, of fair play and civil liberties, because there is a case right on point, and you say in your letter to Senator Fake, a broad judicial interpretation of the legislative immunity in Article 2, Section 6 of the state constitution means that a legislator or former legislator is not in any way bound by a criminal conflict of interest statute. By the way, I'm not sure that's true, because I think there was one count that you sustained on and one count that was lost at the trial level in the case. As you know, legislative immunity excludes any evidence of the legislative conduct, even though the criminal conflict of interest statute requires that there be proof that the public official made use of his office. In effect, legislative immunity is simply another type of exclusionary rule that suppresses relevant, reliable evidence of a criminal act. And then you go on to say, in other words, to the extent that evidence about what a legislator has done cannot be used to show that he, quote, used his office, quote, unquote, we might as well not have criminal conflict, we might as well not have criminal conflict of interest prohibitions. I would assume that that's exactly the way the state's brief is going to be in an appeal. And you may be right, but I would rather than have us accept that argument or reject that argument and thereby imply who ought to prevail, a view of ours as to who ought to prevail in that case, we should let that matter go to take its natural course. We've existed as a state for 25 years. If we go one more year without addressing this question in the legislative sense, because it's being addressed in the judicial sense, you know, the sky isn't going to fall. And see how you make out. You may come back and tell us that we won and the court accepted these arguments, and we know that there's no broad legislative immunity like the trial judge thought there was. Fine. But I really think it's maybe tacky of us to get into that.
Well, we're not asking for a legal judgment as to what the Constitution requires or does not require. What we're asking for is a policy decision by the legislature to decide whether or not it is going to revoke in a criminal prosecution all of the potential protections that might be available under the broadest interpretation of that sort of provision. And if this committee is going to take some kind of action on a criminal conflict of interest, or even if it is going to leave the current law as it exists today, I think that issue ought to be addressed. The Dankworth case, I would only refer to the Dankworth case to use the facts and not try to apply this law to it. But the facts were that some conduct occurred before the legislative session under the constitutional provision that is not protected. Other conduct occurred during the legislative session, and under the judge's interpretation, all of that conduct is protected. Under those circumstances, that's why one count stayed and one count nine got dismissed. But the question is, are legislators going to be bound by a criminal conflict of interest statute during the legislative session? Yes or no? That's the simple way I can explain this.
Well, I have to agree with Senator that I think it should be determined. I think it should be determined in the affirmative. I think we should address that. But I think, given the circumstances, that one more member of this legislature faces in the present time, and this is not the time for us to make that statement. And Joe's right. It's been 25 years. It's not gonna bring the state to its knees if we wait one more session to address that.
Well, if that's the case, and I know that we need to think about it, then we need to put that in a letter of intent.
Yes, I'm sure I would be happy to do that. I would be happy to, as one member of the committee, go on record as saying that serious questions are presented here of public interest, and that they should be considered by the legislature, but that would be our recommendation, or my recommendation, that be done as soon as we have the benefit of the Supreme Court decision. Such a notorious case in the sense of so much publicity, I don't see how anything we could do could help but warp that result one way or the other. I just don't feel right about doing that.
course, you could say, well, it wouldn't work the result because the court would know that you were speaking only, you know, prospectively and all of that. But then again, why speak prospectively if the law that we have is adequate and your position is right? I think it's just a very messy thing to deal with. And when do you think a decision would be made?
State's brief is due within the next couple of weeks. Defendant Senator Dankworth has a month after that.
I would expect a decision.
Yeah, oral arguments will, you know, happen within a month or two after that. A decision within a few months.
Okay.
And then the Supreme Court may have a chance at it.
Sure.
This is just the Court of Appeals.
Yes. Oh, I see. Yeah. And in the meantime, however, we have. You know, we haven't left the matter in the status quo because we have added the civil, we've added the legislature's own ethics commission, spelled out, as you recommended, the sanctions in your other, in the Attorney General's other letter. We're going to do that, I think. So we have added a lot to the arsenal, even if a broad interpretation of the immunity of the criminal law says.
Mr. Barrier?
If I can make a comment, the draftsman standpoint, there's also another reason for waiting for a Supreme Court decision. The scope by which you can waive immunity is before the court, or will be before the court, and it may very possibly be that the court will say you cannot waive immunity at all, or it may set down the limits in which you can waive immunity. So if you pass a bill at this stage, you're creating a constitutional question that you probably won't have, or may not have, when the decision comes down.
That's true. Was that a form of motion? After letter 10, so we could pull it out.
Yes, I would move that the committee address the question of legislative immunity insofar as the criminal law is involved by a letter of intent stating that the issues presented in the letter of April 18th, which was the note that Senator Fakes, are among the issues now pending for the Alaska Court of Appeals, and that it is in the Dankworth case that those issues should be addressed. There's finality.
Sure. I wonder if we could ask for the guard to have a letter of intent ready for us.
I was going to ask Senator Josephson to have that done.
I'll work with Mr. Barrier.
Okay. Are there any objections to the motion and the letter of intent? Very good. Fine. It will be done. Are there any other questions to Mr. Guanella? All right. This is what I plan for the committee. You have the work draft of 411 before you. I would like you to study it with the time remaining this evening. Come to the meeting tomorrow with your final and absolute changes. And by the end of the meeting tomorrow, I would like to pass out the conflict of interest and ethics commission's legislation. I'm not done yet. Now, I would also like to, is 5 o'clock a good time?
Yeah,
we got lunch today. Very good.
Minority member. We're not used to working.
But you're such a good minority member, Senator Kelly. You've had such good input. You've had such good changes. You're hanging in there. You're just, we don't view you as a minority member, Senator. We view you as a majority.
Majority leader.
Okay. So wait. I'll hang in there a few more minutes. So.